Hello, and welcome to the Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month. This monthly cassette tape series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy & Associates' vision of helping the service contractor come to a place of maturity and profitability. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service and trades industry will share dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. This month's tape is presented by Leonard Sklar. Mr. Sklar specialized in collections for over 25 years, producing seminars, audio tapes, videotapes, training courses, and a book on collections entitled The Check Is Not in the Mail. Leonard started and later sold a national collections agency. Like many entrepreneurs, Leonard has produced a lot of income over the years. Unlike many entrepreneurs, however, he has found ways to invest his profits in a way that has resulted in his becoming a self-made millionaire. If you'll remember, our March tape was entitled, It's What You Get to Keep That Counts. In this tape, Mr. Sklar will give you lots of practical suggestions on how to invest what you got to keep. So perhaps you may become a millionaire as well.
This tape is for anyone who wants to become a millionaire, which isn't as tough as it sounds, as you'll see. And it's also for those who are already millionaires by inheritance and need to learn how to stay that way. That's not so easy. Have you ever heard the saying, from rags to riches and back to rags in three generations? The reason that happens so often is that anyone who inherits wealth probably didn't learn what it took to accumulate that pile. And the key is learning. You can learn many skills: reading, singing, fixing cars, making things, using a personal computer, and so on. You can also learn to become a millionaire. You don't need to be born to it, you don't want to depend on winning a lottery, and you definitely don't want to think for a second that you can't do it. You can, and maybe you will. But wishing won't make it happen, nor will living a totally blameless, completely honest, and moral life, although those are smart moves on their own merits. Just thinking about becoming a millionaire is actually frightening to many folks. Some fear that their friends will abandon them, or others will accuse them of being too good for them. Some would-be millionaires are afraid of being hit up for loans by friends, and being bothered by every charity around to make a major contribution to them. Then there are those who have mixed feelings about the effect on their kids, that they could become spoiled rotten, for example. Or, if these parents worry about what they consider sacrificing for the kids to become a millionaire, they may not want to pay what they think is the price. Incidentally, when we get to the part about what you actually do to become a millionaire, the concept of sacrificing, in the sense of feeling like a martyr, doesn't apply. There will, of course, be some choices that are better than others, but the notion of avoiding having a life, living like a cheapskate, buying secondhand things all the time, or just not enjoying life day by day, all that is not required and not recommended. So, I ask you to discard all your notions of what you think is involved in becoming a millionaire and what the trade-offs might be. At the same time, it would be dishonest to suggest that everyone listening to this tape will become a millionaire. Many will not. Those that don't, or think they can't, will fail, not because of some technical weakness, an inherited defect, a lack of raw brain power, but because of emotional baggage, some of which is self-imposed and some based on pressure by parents, spouse, relatives, friends, even kids. For that reason, I'm spending a lot of time now on the psychology of and ways of thinking about the subject, although I will definitely get to the how-to parts as we go along. What you are hearing on this tape comes directly from my own experience, so there will be no theory thrown at you that has not been backed up by direct, practical, and personal experience. Let me give you a snapshot of my background. I was born into a lower middle-class family. I went to college, but since the family couldn't afford tuition, I had to work to earn the entire cost of the 4 years of college. I was employed for the next 14 years by some well-known companies, Dow Chemical, Procter & Gamble, and IBM. At age 36, I got the urge to start a business, any business, just so I could be my own boss. And I began in a field I knew nothing about, the collection industry. Fortunately, I don't mind taking some prudent risks, so I call myself an entrepreneur. I began with a collection agency, then started a collection seminar business, a credit and collection temp staffing company, and I wrote a book called The Check Is Not in the Mail. I married and had two children, now grown, out of the house, and entrepreneurs on their own, which naturally makes me very proud of them. My wife comes from a background similar to mine. I am a millionaire, with liquid assets, mostly in common stocks, in excess of $1 million. If I can start from nothing, so can others. I believe that I had it tougher than you, Will, because I had no teacher, mentor, advisor, or relative who could or would help me learn the lessons I needed to know. I had no tape recording, seminar, or wealthy and wise friend. As for general advice, I had to learn, slowly and painfully, which were the good ideas and which were not. I made plenty of mistakes, such as buying avocado groves when the demand was rising nicely. What I didn't take into account was that a lot of other people got the same bright idea. Avocado production rose a lot faster than did demand, and the price of avocados and of my land investment went nowhere. That experience was so sobering because I had done what I considered was extensive and intensive research into the entire avocado industry, and yet I missed something as fundamental as how many other groves were being sold to people like me. One of the key lessons from the avocado experience is making sure you find out what questions should be asked about an investment. I'll go over that before we're done. I also want to bring up right now a fundamental issue in becoming a millionaire, and this is it. In accumulating, spending, and investing your money, you have heard, are now hearing, and you will continue to hear lots of advice and from plenty of advisors, many, if not most of whom, will be brilliant, logical, even successful people. But here's the problem. A lot of the advice you hear is in direct conflict and total disagreement with other, comparably sensible-sounding advice. I guarantee that much of what you hear on this tape will disagree with what others will tell you. You will have to decide if my ideas make sense to you, but you've always had to make decisions like that. Here's an example of bad advice I got from a so-called expert. A number of years ago, after reading about it for a long time, I decided to buy some shares of a company called Berkshire Hathaway, which was, and still is, run by an investment genius named Warren Buffett. You may have heard of him. At the time, I had a stockbroker, and the stock was selling at $3,200 a share. When I told my broker I wanted to buy some shares, he told me that was a bad idea because the price per share was so high and I could get more shares of some other company with a lower price per share. Well, that was such stupid advice that I stopped using brokers from that day forward. What was so dumb about the advice? Several things. First of all, the company was then and still is a terrific one with excellent growth prospects. But the most idiotic part of the advice is that the number of shares you have is meaningless. But there are a lot of suckers who buy penny or low-priced stocks just to brag about how many shares they have. The only benefit of a low-priced stock, and it isn't much, is that a small dollar increase in price will produce a higher percent gain than the same dollar increase in a higher-priced stock. But you really have to examine what is likely to cause any amount of price increase. What counts in a stock investment are the factors that will most directly affect the increase in earnings per share over many years, factors such as market dominance, patents and research, manufacturing capacity and efficiency, cost control, management skill and depth, independent analyst evaluations, price-earning ratios, and a whole lot more. This takes study, and I'll tell you how to find out about these factors. But no shooting from the hip. By the way, Berkshire Hathaway is now selling for about $46,000 a share, which is a nice increase from $3,200 a share. As I proceed in setting the stage for the planning to become a millionaire, I want to give plenty of credit to a book with the title of The Millionaire Next Door by Thomas Stanley and William Danko. It is fantastic. They've been researching and reporting on the subject for years, and some of their observations and summaries are completely unexpected. Others will confirm with hard data some of the notions you may have suspected about millionaires but couldn't prove. One interesting conclusion is that most millionaires are not easy to spot. They don't flaunt their wealth. They could easily be your neighbor. They could just as easily be you. Another surprising conclusion is that although the relationship between education and income is positive, the relationship between education and wealth accumulation is negative, which means that those higher incomes are usually consumed rather than saved or invested. On another point, I'd also like to note that the knowledge level and investment experience of the listeners of this tape will vary from highly sophisticated to totally uninformed or even badly informed, which means that not all of what you hear will be of equal interest to each listener. That's pretty obvious, but I felt it needed to be said. So let's move on to the two key steps in becoming a millionaire: accumulating the necessary cash and then investing it well. The first step, obviously, is accumulating. There are many ways of thinking about having money to invest. Some are useful and others are destructive. We need to look closely at how you think, because the sum of your thoughts on a given subject can be called a belief system. And these belief systems are extremely powerful. Our actions are usually determined by our belief systems. It's true that we can exercise choice, and fortunately, belief systems can be changed, but it takes some work to do it, because we have put a lot of energy into constructing the belief system in the first place. Here's an example. We used to be told that eating red meat was not only healthy, but it was also a sign of financial success. Our parents and grandparents ate red meat and eggs and butter as often as possible. Honored guests were served the best steaks. Fortunately, we've learned a lot since those days. Many folks now pay attention to the research and conclusions about the long-term damaging effects of those foods, and they've changed their diets accordingly. The changed actions flowed from the changed belief system. The same dynamic applies to much of your life. So now let's delve into your beliefs about becoming a millionaire. Here are some thoughts that can help build a healthy belief system about that subject. 1. You can get started anytime. Sooner is better than later, but no matter what your age is, you can decide right now to begin or to step up the pace. 2. Your economic status need not limit you. If you don't make as much or have as much left over as others do, use what you do have or could have by better spending or saving habits. Forget about those who have more excess cash than you do. A lot of them spend it unwisely, they consume all they have, and like to show off their money. Their attitude may be, spend it now, you could die tomorrow. Or it may be, what's the point of earning a good living if you can't show it off? 3. Shop smart. A high percentage of very wealthy people look for bargains until the day they die. For example, instead of buying a new car every other year, which costs a bundle and depreciating value of the vehicle when it's sold or traded in, the smart buyers hold on to a car for 5 years or more and keep it well maintained the entire time. 4. You may have heard a lot about diversifying your investments. This is a truly big issue, so let me share with you my own thoughts about it. I begin with the inescapable, irrefutable observation that over time, nothing, and I do mean nothing, beats investments in good U.S. common stocks. Not real estate, not gold, not bonds, nothing. It's not that there's anything particularly unwise about any of the alternatives to U.S. common stocks. It's just that I believe that the bulk of your money should go there. I also do not find that having a whole lot of different stocks is a good idea, just because it allows you to say that you are diversified. 2 or 3 stocks, or a half dozen, tops, works very well. I'll talk later about how you select the stocks and how and when to buy them. For now, when you hear the word diversify, be very skeptical. 5. You do not need so-called experts to advise you, unless it's a certified professional who charges you fees for time spent advising you and sells no investment products. If an advisor gets commissions on investment products sold to you, he or she may not be objective. As for stockbrokers, I have already pointed out one of their flaws, namely the capacity for sloppy thinking. In addition, brokers often have certain stocks to push that their brokerage firm has in inventory and the brokers make added commission from. Another problem with putting your investment affairs in the hands of a broker is that they have a powerful incentive to recommend that you buy this or sell that for some great sounding reason or another, but in the process, earning commissions for themselves on every trade. Because of this built-in conflict of interest, they simply cannot be objective or capable of looking out for your interests as compared to their own. 6. My next comment may surprise you. Even if you are new to the investment world, I do not recommend mutual funds. They're okay, and you can expect to increase your money with most of them, but the point is that you can do a lot better by the careful selection of individual company stocks. So do not let the so-called professionals managing mutual funds make decisions for you. In addition, there are so many funds available now, you don't know what stocks they hold, except for a short time, or how they make decisions, and they do an awful lot of buying and selling, which helps deplete their assets, which are actually your assets. To give you more knowledge and confidence in companies and stocks and other investments, I strongly suggest you subscribe to and read the Wall Street Journal every day. It is without doubt the best source of information on markets, economies, industries, companies, stock market actions and interpretations, and all the statistical data you could want. And most of the stories are interesting. The toll-free phone number for the journal is 1-800-568-7625. If you're not now subscribing to the journal, stop this tape, call right now and order it. It's a necessary step on your way to millionaire status. Another source of knowledge about the best ways to think about investments is to get from Berkshire Hathaway all of the chairman's letters to shareholders by Warren Buffett. They're free. This man is not only wise, but he's funny, and his reports are highly readable. The phone number is area code 402-346-1400. If you're on the internet, their homepage is www.berkshirehathaway.com. There are no spaces between any of the letters. So it's BERKSHIREHATHAWAY. I want to make some comments about real estate. In inflationary times, it can be a great investment. A down payment on property can be leveraged nicely when property values are rising. What do I mean by leveraging? Suppose you invest $10,000 on a $100,000 property with a mortgage for the balance. Assume the value of your property increases 10% in a year or two, so your property is now worth $110,000 or a $10,000 increase. You invested $10,000 and you are now $10,000 ahead for a 100% increase in your investment in that property. Not bad. But on the other hand, we have to assume that rents will cover the mortgage and other costs, that tenants don't trash the property, and that you don't have too many vacancies. In addition, if the property doesn't increase in value, you have what can be called a non-performing asset. And if times are not inflationary, which is the case today in 1998, even the positives in real estate may not be available to you. So, how do you accumulate the excess cash you need to invest? The answer is both blindingly simple as well as very difficult. You begin with the intention to accumulate. This is neither wishful thinking nor positive thinking. Here's a little philosophy about the relevance and power of intention with regard to another subject that's difficult to nail down, namely communication. The essence of communication is intention. It's not so much what you say or even how you say it. If you intend to communicate, you'll find a way to do it. So it is with accumulating excess cash. By listening to this tape, you are already continuing in your intention to accumulate. Other ways of accumulating are fairly standard. For example, use high deductibles to cut all your insurance premiums. The higher, the better. Do not put a dime into a lottery. The odds are ridiculous. By the same token, if you have to gamble, do it with friends and keep the stakes low and friendly. Have all the vacationing and entertainment you want, but be aware of the costs involved, and ask yourself if you feel you are getting your money's worth. Pay your credit cards each month in full so that you don't get hit with interest charges of 18% and up. Refinance your mortgage when the interest rate is about 2% lower than your current rate. And while we're on mortgages, which is a major expense, put in an extra month's payment each year and tell them to apply it to the principal, which will have your mortgage paid off faster, and if you're renting, plan to buy and get a tax deduction on your mortgage interest. The list is endless. Some people who are seriously aggressive about getting extra money to invest go to what others consider unreasonable lengths, such as giving blood for money, having a yard sale or a bake sale, taking a second job, etc. I am not suggesting any of these. I am just pointing out how far a strong intention to accumulate extra money can take you. And be sure to read The Millionaire Next Door for more ideas on the lifestyles of millionaires and how they got that way while still enjoying day-to-day living. Remember, you're not sacrificing with all the emotional baggage and sadness that word can suggest. You are, however, going to make better and more informed choices, and as a bonus, have a better life while you accumulate the money you need to become a millionaire. It's a sad fact that far too many older people do not have nearly enough money to live out their lives comfortably. Many of them never gave a thought to the need to learn how to save and invest more effectively. That's something they would get around to later, but later never came. That's similar to the thinking, or more accurately, the non-thinking of the teenager who sits in the sun to get a wonderful tan and doesn't feel the need to think about skin cancer, liver spots, or much of anything else but what looks and feels good right now. Well, you have to think about the future. If you like, you can make a game out of accumulating. Set goals. Give yourself rewards for meeting objectives. In other words, have some fun in saving. That's a pretty good trade-off for any so-called sacrificing you may be doing. Above all, make the commitment now. Assume nobody is going to give you anything and that you have to do it all yourself. For most of us, that's the reality anyway. Is there any downside to making and sustaining a lifelong commitment to accumulate cash? None that I can think of. The next section of this tape is how to invest the cash you are accumulating now and or will be in the future. But first, I'd like to offer an exercise that could be useful in solidifying your intention to make what amounts to some changes in your living habits. Turn off the tape again, get a pad of paper and a pen, and start writing down your thoughts right now about what you plan to do, would like to think about doing, and any specific plans to implement. And if you don't like to do this kind of process, forget about it and just keep listening. Investing to become a millionaire contains a number of key questions that I will address. They include when to start, how much to invest at a time, where to keep the cash prior to investing, what to invest in, and a lot more. When to start investing? Obviously, as soon as you can put away, say, a few thousand dollars in your checking or savings account. How do you identify good stocks to invest in? Big question. I look for companies that are most likely to increase their earnings per share at an average of 20% a year or more for many years to come. Great, but how do you determine that? First, look for companies that have done that in the past. Sure, that's no guarantee on similar performance in the future, but it's a healthy start. Look at competition, always. The industry leaders are often the best investments. If you have access to American Online or similar personal computer services, you can get the phone number of any company from the quotes and portfolio section. Click on company research, then on company capsules, then on search company capsules. On that last screen, you type in the name or stock symbol of any company that interests you. You'll find lots of information, including the company phone number. Call the shareholders relations departments of the companies that interest you and ask for the latest annual report, their 10K, their latest quarterly earnings statement, and any recent investment analyst reports they have. Study the information and watch the company and its stock for weeks or even months before you make a move. Become familiar and comfortable with the company. Only when you feel you know the company and can tell others about it in detail, only then should you invest. I'm going to repeat that. Only when you feel you know the company and can tell others about it in detail, only then should you invest. There's no rush. Good companies will continue to be good investments for a long time. And once again, you must consider investing as a long-term proposition. Be aware of the price earnings or PE ratio, but don't be worried too much about a high one, because it often reflects a fast-growing company. The P.E. ratio is the price per share of a company's stock divided by the earnings per share for the past four quarters of a year. A stock like Microsoft can have a P.E. of 50 or more, which reflects the expectation of the market that growth over the long term will continue to be impressive in spite of any short-term setbacks. I want to make a general comment about the stock market. The market is a place where all the buyers and sellers of stocks express their feelings, positive, negative, or neutral, about investing in specific stocks or investing at all. The market is heavily influenced by mob psychology. Therefore, the so-called experts, with all the available information at their fingertips, are in no better position than you are to make sound investment decisions. In fact, you are in a better position because the experts who commonly set price targets for either buying or selling wind up trading more than you will. The concept of price targets reflects a short-term goal. It is a mistake and is in direct conflict with the proven advantage of a long-term focus on investing. You, following this much better strategy, will hold on to your good stocks through their inevitable ups and downs. You will not be tempted to guess highs and lows, which no one can do anyway, and you will do better than these traders as a result. Let me emphasize that you simply cannot determine the highs or lows of any stock until after the fact when it does you no good. People make more mistakes thinking a stock has hit a short-term high and then selling, only to see the stock rocket up again after a short sell-off. The same goes for lows. Forget about waiting for one to occur before making your initial purchase of a good stock. Although a temporary drop in a stock you already hold can be a good time to add to your position in that stock. Instead, a good strategy is called dollar cost averaging, in which you invest more or less the same amount of money in a good stock steadily over time. You'll get more shares when the price is lower and fewer when it's higher. But you'll be doing what's known as building a position over time, and that's the idea. Remember, you are investing for the long haul. Prices rise and they fall. During the inevitable drops, I beg you to develop the awareness that the long-term approach is your investment salvation. Your faith and good judgment will be most severely tested when your stocks drop in price and even stay low for a while. Friends and family may give you a bad time and question your judgment. When I see my stocks or the overall market drop, my attitude is, good, it's a buying opportunity. One other important point. Some investors avoid committing money to a good stock until the future clears up. The problem with that kind of non-thinking is that the future is never clear, and nobody can see into it. Another old Wall Street bit of wisdom is the saying that you can never go broke taking a profit. That comes from stockbrokers who want to make a commission on a sale, and they use this meaningless nonsense to justify it. I say meaningless because taking a profit is just another way of saying that trading is a good strategy, and it is not. Intel is an example of a stock I keep buying and also why I keep buying it. The company dominates a market that is itself growing at a furious pace and, in my opinion, is likely to continue doing so. Far from becoming complacent, the company is paranoid about the potential for some upstart outfit identifying and then dominating a market niche that Intel has overlooked. Another advantage of Intel's dominance is the cost of microprocessor factories at about $1.5 billion each, which makes it tougher for others to enter the field. The P.E. ratio, the time I prepared this tape, was around 20 to 1, which I believe is incredibly low for a high-tech, fast-growing, dominant, aggressive company such as Intel. I don't intend to give stock tips, but to further illustrate my thinking on stock selection, I want to comment on Starbucks, the coffee company. They are not only growing at a healthy rate, they are smart and aggressive in planning future growth in as many ways of selling their coffee as possible, including their deal with United Airlines to use Starbucks coffee on all United flights, a deal with Dreyer's for several varieties of coffee ice cream. They are starting to sell ground coffee in supermarkets. They continue to add espresso shops all over the U.S. They are expanding into other countries and so on. I can easily see growth of 20 to 30% per year. The price-earnings ratio is much higher than Intel's, but that doesn't concern me because that's been the case for years. The only rational explanation I can make for such divergent price-earnings ratios between two comparably growing companies is the irrational nature of market dynamics. Or maybe it's easier for the average investor to understand coffee as compared to microprocessors. Here's a few more general suggestions on buying stocks. Don't buy IPOs, which stands for initial public offerings, which is the stock of a company when it first goes public. Insiders in the company and stock brokers get the best prices on this stock, and the public usually gets hurt. Also, avoid any stock promoted to you over the phone by someone making unsolicited phone calls. Do not believe a word they are saying. Do not agree to their sense of urgency or what a fabulous deal they are bringing you. Just hang up as quickly as you feel comfortable doing it. Suppose you have an unexpected expense and not enough excess cash available. Should you then sell some stock? My answer is a solid no. I prefer to borrow against the stock as collateral. The process is simple. Let's say you have $50,000 worth of stock in Company A. The borrowing capacity, or margin, on that stock is currently, in 1998, 50% or up to $25,000. The brokerage firm you buy and sell stocks with provides checks you can use to borrow against your account. Here are the key economic reasons for borrowing against your stock instead of selling stock to get the same amount of money. The cost of borrowing is around 8% or 9%. If your stock is increasing in value an average of 15 to 20% or more, you should happily pay 9% in order to keep an asset that is appreciating at twice that cost. See how simple, obvious, and beneficial that thinking is, and yet, far too many stockholders hate the idea of being in debt. There's another belief system for you. But I believe that there's good debt and bad debt. Bad debt is paying 18% or more interest on credit card purchases when you don't have to. I have just described an example of very smart debt. The mistake is in oversimplifying your thinking with the position that being debt-free is, by definition, a good thing. I have even used some margin credit to buy a favored stock that has hit a temporary low point. I do this very prudently, and I always make sure I have plenty of margin left over in case of a serious market drop, which might otherwise force me to sell stock to pay for the money I had borrowed. Since I am strongly recommending long-term growth stocks, you should know that few of them pay dividends, so they will not provide an income. You can find plenty of stocks that do pay dividends, but I avoid them completely because they almost always are slow-growing or non-growing companies that have to pay dividends in order to attract capital at all. Since you may want some income-producing investments, you can certainly put some of your money into bonds. I do not claim expertise in this area, and there are plenty of sources of information about T-bills, tax-free, municipals, junk bonds, etc. I will admit that I have been slow to put money into fixed income investments because I am far more easily motivated to invest in stocks that keep on increasing at 20% per year and more over time. That makes me more of a risk taker, according to many advisors, but I'm comfortable with it. So, let me summarize the central themes of this tape. Accumulating the money to invest is fundamentally a matter of intention. There are infinite ways of doing it. We've all read about the schoolteacher, janitor, or store clerk who died, leaving hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars to some favorite charity. So, accumulating is very doable. The key fundamental concept in investing is the idea of a long-term focus, buy and hold. That concept will save you when you make other errors in judgment along the way. That doesn't mean you should never sell. I have sold when I learned about a company that I felt would do significantly better over the long term versus another company stock that I held. Other than that, buy a few great stocks and keep adding to them when they hit temporary lows. This tape contains a belief system that has worked very well for me and for a few others I've advised. It took me years to acquire these ways of thinking and acting. You may want to listen to this tape more than once. Make some notes. Develop a few initial plans and intentions. And, as a result, move more quickly and with more certainty down the road to becoming a millionaire. I wish you well.
As usual, we hope this edition of the Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month has given you many new ideas to help you run your company more effectively. Also, don't forget to phone, fax, or call in your order for the ServiceSense tape series for technicians. Order today and get a free tape album.
Where else can you train your technicians in customer service for only $99.95 a year? The Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.